Okay, this work is co-authored with Kuei Ho, who is at Ohio State University. It's a little bit different work for me in that it doesn't involve anything in continuous time. So this is my only strand of literature that only occurs in discrete time. But what's it about? Well, we're looking at assignment of risk premia to factors in typical linear factor models. So these have a very solid basis in financial theory. So everyone has seen equations of the form expected return as risk-free rate plus risk premia for your risk exposure to various sources of economic risk. Now, people have proposed many such different models, and there are different techniques for dealing with issues like how do you test such a model, parameters of a model. One approach is the GMM approach, and this is something. But if what you're interested in are the risk premia of the factors, so if you're interested in making statements like, if you face this source of economic risk in such and such a quantity, then you will receive a risk premium in terms of expected returns of 50 basis points a month. If that's the kind of thing that you're interested in, then the typical GMM procedure does not provide you that information. It doesn't identify those parameters. And so what people will often do, a very typical approach, is a two-stage regression procedure. And our argument here will be that the results of such two-stage regression procedures are misleading at best and often just flat out wrong. Here's an example. This is a very typical type procedure that's applied in the literature. We've simplified it a little bit, and what people usually do is they divide their data into sub-periods. We're just estimating one model over the entire sample period, but it's just by way of example, we took the three-factor Fama-French model. What the model is not particularly important, but it's got these three factors: market risk, size risk, and value risk. And what you do is you run time series regressions in order to estimate the exposure of each asset to each of the three sources of risk, and then do a cross-sectional regression of expected returns on the beta coefficients, which are the output of the first stage regression. Now, one of the problems that you have there is errors and variables. That was dealt with at least asymptotically a long time ago in work by Jay Schenken. However, in the presence of model misspecification, so if it's possible that you're missing some of the factors from your model, you can have some problems that are much more serious than just errors and variables, and we'll have a look here. So what we did, we took 25 size and industry portfolios from Ken French's website and applied this procedure. Now, the three factors are all traded assets, and here are their sample average excess returns. Now, we would argue that any procedure that assigns to these assets risk premia different than those three numbers is doing something wrong. And we applied the two-stage regression procedure. And for size and value risk, we get numbers that are a little bit different than the sample average. You can debate how important those differences are. But for market risk, we find something that just massively contradicts what you think ought to be the case, that the market has a significant positive risk premium. Fama-French in the 90s argued that it has no risk premium using a longer data sample. Here, we find that using this procedure, this two-stage procedure, the market has a risk premium somewhere in the neighborhood of -1% per month. So if that's the case, how does the market earn a positive risk premium on average over time, because it doesn't have exposure to any source of risk other than itself? So this kind of result, the fact that you can get results out of this type of two-stage regression procedure, has always bothered us, and we feel that it's being used a lot of the times to support conclusions that aren't really warranted. So we wanted to have a look at what really drives that kind of result, what drives the discrepancy between the risk premium coming from the cross-sectional regression procedure and by the risk premium you get simply by taking the average excess return of the factors. Well, so what we did was we recognized that the three factors in this procedure are all traded. They're all traded assets, but the procedure fails to take advantage of the fact that they're traded. It treats them exactly the same as if they were not traded assets. Now, is that a big deal? Well, we ran the following regression of the turns of the factor portfolios, so the three FAMA French factors on the 25 test assets that we used to get the results on the previous page. And we found that although they're not spanned by the 25 assets, the unspanned component is relatively small, particularly for the market. Found that the R-squared in a regression of the market returns on the 25 assets is greater than 0.99. So if all you can do is trade in the 25 assets, you can't replicate the market portfolio perfectly, but you can come awfully close. So these three assets, although they're treated as if they're not traded, it seems like kind of introducing the unspanned components of them to the analysis really shouldn't make that much of a difference, because they're replicated fairly closely by assets that are traded. Just as another measure of how big are the unspanned components of these three factors, we just calculated the in-sample Sharpe ratio of what you can get with the 25 test assets, and that was 0.3216. If you add these three assets as additional assets you can invest in, so we now have 28, the in-sample Sharpe ratio goes up. It has to go up. It can't do anything else. But it doesn't go up by much. It goes from 0.3216 to 0.3338. So by both of these measures, although the three factors are treated as if they're unspanned here, the unspanned components seem like they're fairly small. And if you do what we do on the next slide, which is add the unspanned components as traded assets, you think probably, given that they're small, they really shouldn't make that much of a difference. The difference is massive, in particular an estimation of the risk premium of the market portfolio, which snaps from numbers around -1%, a little bit more or less, depending on whether you use ordinary or generalized least squares in your cross-sectional regression, to numbers that are much, much closer to the sample average. Okay, so a small difference in the investment environment here makes a huge difference in the output of a cross-sectional regression procedure here. So that's one phenomenon that we want to examine and explain. The other is a problem that arises with model selection. So we wanted to analyze this procedure that is very often performed in various implied empirical finance type papers, and we would argue is just simply wrong. So what we did to construct this example, we took the same 25 assets and we engineered two models that explain all of the asset returns perfectly in sample. So we built two distinct two-factor models and applied the procedure. Because the fit is perfect, the standard errors are all zero, the gamma zero coefficient, which is the unexplained component of risk premium, is zero, so we get everything you would expect from models that have perfect in-sample fit. But the relevant phenomenon here is that the estimated risk premium for the second factor in the first model is something that's a positive number with massive statistical significance, because the standard error is zero. In the second model, it's estimated at zero. So the typical conclusion that people would make in empirical literature is, well, in the first model, the second factor is important because it has a positive risk premium. If you have exposure to the second factor, you earn a risk premium, and if you leave the second factor out of your model, you're missing something important. In the second model, the second factor has a risk premium of zero, and therefore this is a factor that doesn't matter, and you can just throw it in the rubbish bin, and it shouldn't matter because the risk premium is zero. And that conclusion is just totally unwarranted. So as we found when we removed the second factor from each of the models, in the first model, where the second factor had a positive risk premium, found removing it made no difference at all in the model's fit. It still fits all of the data perfectly. And the risk premium that was previously associated with the second factor is simply transferred to the first. And the mechanism for that is that because the input to the second stage procedure are beta coefficients from a first stage regression. When you take away a factor, if your factors are correlated, the betas on the remaining factors change. So that's the mechanism by which the first factor here is able to absorb the risk premium that was previously explained by the second factor. By contrast, the second model, which had a risk premium of zero on the second factor, if you conclude from that, as many people often do, that, oh, this factor is unimportant, let's throw it away, if you throw it away, the fit on the model deteriorates significantly. The model does not fit as well. It predicts different expected returns than it did before. So that's the second phenomenon that we want to look at, use of these regression results for model selection, which we would argue is completely unwarranted. Okay, a few basic results, particularly on span factors, so that is factors that are traded assets. If all of the factors were spanned, the world would be an extremely simple place, because all you would have to do is say, let's find the sample excess return of the factor mimicking portfolio, and that's going to be the best estimate of the risk premium of that factor that you can find. Okay, so the paper goes into this and finds that in any model at all, doesn't depend on what the other factors are, doesn't depend on what assets you use to fit or test the model, in any model at all that's correctly specified, that's what the risk premium of a span factor has to be. Has to be equal to its excess return. Since we know that that's what it has to be in a correct model, we see no particular reason to assign to a span factor a risk premium that's different than that, simply because we haven't identified all of the other factors that are needed to price assets correctly. Despite that, many, as we've just seen, many econometric procedures do, in fact, produce results that are quite different than the excess return of the factor mimicking portfolio. And we call that misattribution. It's really a version of omitted variable bias. So if you look at what's going on in a second stage fitting procedure, input, the X variables or beta coefficients that are the output of a time series regression, and the Y variable are the sample excess returns of the test assets, well, just go to the usual X prime X inverse X prime Y formula for regression, plug in what are the X variables, what are the Y variables, and manipulate it a bit, and here's what you get. You get the output of the second stage regression. The estimated risk premia are the excess returns, the sample excess returns of the factor portfolios, plus this component here, which we call misattribution. It's essentially projection of the part of the excess returns that your model cannot explain. So if you've got either sampling variation or if you're missing some factors, so your model doesn't work, there's some unexplained component to expected returns, the regression procedure does its job and tries to fit that as best as it can onto the risk exposures that are in the model, and so if the exposure to whatever the missing factor is cross-sectionally correlated with exposure to known factors, the regression procedure will misattribute risk premium due to exposure to the unknown factor onto the known factors. So our conclusion there is that these kind of procedures are overfitting by construction in the case of span factors, and we see no particular reason to go to something as elaborate as a two-stage procedure at all for span factors. Just take the sample average of the factor mimicking portfolios. Now, you don't always have span factors. Sometimes people use explanatory factors that are not traded assets, and that makes the world a much more complicated place. Well, we can analyze unspanned factors by decomposing them into span factors called P and unspanned components called eta. And if we do that, what we find is, first off, the span components of the factors are just as good a model as the unspanned factors themselves. So if you have a set of factors, they're not traded, you can replace the unspanned, the non-traded factors by their spanned components, and the fit of the model will be exactly the same as it was when you just used the unspanned factors. The risk premia attributed to the spanned components of the factors, though, will not be the same as the risk premia attributed to the original unspanned factors. And in fact, we can derive exactly what the relationship is between the two. So the risk premia assigned to unspanned factors is the risk premia assigned to spanned factors plus something that we call the extrapolation component. So essentially, a cross-sectional fitting procedure with unspanned factors is taking risk premia that is associated with the spanned components of the factors and extrapolating it out onto the unspanned components of the factors in a way that we would argue is just economically not meaningful. In particular, I would note that there's a covariance matrix in this expression that has an inverse. So this is the covariance matrix of the span components of the factors. Now, if one of the eigenvalues of that matrix is really small, when we take its inverse, it's going to have a really big eigenvalue. And the result of that, depending on what the other numbers are, these projected or extrapolation components could be huge. So a cross-sectional procedure can come back and tell you, oh, the risk premium associated with this risk factor is 150 basis points a month, then is it meaningful? Well, part of that risk premium is something that's really in the data. That's the actual excess return of the span component of the factor. So that's a portfolio. It's something you can buy or sell. Okay? The rest of it is simply extrapolation. So we would argue that rather than just looking at what is the risk premium of the unspanned factor, we think it's a value to look at it and see how much of that is really, how much of it is economically real, how much of it is the excess return of a portfolio that you can actually buy or sell, and how much of it is a result of this extrapolation. So just to ask how bad these two effects together can be, in particular the extrapolation component, what we want to ask, suppose I've got a model with span factors and I've estimated the risk premium of the factors, and now suppose I just want to add an unspanned component to the two factors. So I just want to add noise. Okay. By adding the noise, can I make the risk premia of the two factors be anything I want? The answer to that is no. There isn't that much flexibility, but there's a lot of flexibility. So just in a simple two-factor model, if the vector of risk premia is right here, by adding noise to the factors, by adding unspanned components, you can make the risk premia vector of the unspanned factors occupy any part of that half space there. So you can make them both really big. You can make one a really huge positive number and the other a really huge negative number. It's just great flexibility there. The other question we want to ask about how meaningful these unspanned components are, suppose you have a model and it has unspanned factors and it doesn't quite work. So there's a little bit of misspecification. You're failing to get some of the expected returns right. Then you go out and you discover the missing factor. You find out the factor that's missing, and when you incorporate it into your model, it makes it fit all of the asset returns perfectly. How much can the risk premia assigned to your unspanned factors change? The answer is that they can change to anything at all. So totally arbitrary, literally no restrictions. So by clever choice of the missing factor, I can introduce it into the model and cause the risk premia of all the existing factors in the model, all of the unspanned components, to become zero if I like. I can cause them to become really huge numbers, whatever you want. So we would argue that the risk premium of an unspanned factor is, in and of itself, it's just not meaningful. Okay? It only has meaning within the context of a model that prices all of the assets correctly. And the same factor embedded within different models can have totally different risk premia. So statements like, oh, the risk premia of exposure to this source of economic risk If that source is not a traded asset, this is just not a well-defined question. It's a question that can have any answer that you want. Okay. Our take on model selection, so the other problem, is that essentially this type of cross-sectional regression procedure has nothing useful at all to say about model selection, but there is something you can do there. If you're interested in knowing how one of the whether one of the factors is important in a model, in the case of span factors, you can simply regress its excess returns on the other factors and look at what is its estimated alpha and is it statistically significant. So we argue that, rather than the gamma coefficients in a cross-sectional regression, are what you really ought to be looking at. When the factors are unspanned, it's a little bit more complicated, but there's still a procedure that works there and is not susceptible to the problem that I mentioned earlier. Okay. So to sum up then, span factors we think are extremely simple. The risk premia are the excess returns of the factor portfolios, and you shouldn't use a procedure that assigns something different than that to the risk premia of span factors. Unspanned factors, it's a whole different world, and we would argue that the risk premium of an unspanned factor is not even a well-defined idea. It can be anything you want it to be, so like the old lawyer's joke. So what can you do? Well, you can look at things that are well-defined, specifically the risk premium of the spanned component of an unspanned factor. That is a well-defined quantity, and when using models that have unspanned factors, we would suggest reporting those in addition to simply the risk premium of the unspanned factors. And we've also given our take on model selection, and suggest a better procedure for that isn't susceptible to the problem that in my second example, that the risk premium of a factor has essentially nothing to do with its importance in a particular model or not. Okay. Thank you.